Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that likes to tilt. We tilt away at the big stories, right and left and center. I'm Robin Adair, and, thinking about some of the far-out things we do in this show, there's nothing more far-out than my co-host with the most, John Jurisic, the Croatian sensation. And John, you know we're in an election year, and there seems to be so much bloodletting on right now in the New Democratic Party.
Robin, I love election years. Okay, not only do the parties attack each other, but in some instances they attack themselves. And the NDP these days has a massive lead in the recent opinion polls. I do not think they will lose that. And however, there's a split on the right, the rise of a small but very loud, especially in the opinion polls, BC Conservative Party draining momentum from Kevin Falcon and BC United. In fact, could be the BC United is bye-bye. Who knows? So this is smooth sailing for Premier EB and company, but not at the moment.
And this may have a lasting effect on how things go forward. It's been so angry, the response. And there's anger pro and con about the firing of Advanced Education Minister Selena Robinson because she made an unfortunate turn of phrase about the founding of Israel. And to underline this, Selena Robinson is Jewish and was speaking to a Jewish online panel, but she did commit a gaffe. Robinson called the land that became Israel in the 1940s crappy land. And she later explained in a letter of an apology that, and clarification, she was actually talking about the fact it lacked natural resources and didn't have a lot of farming land there. And in some respects, that's a pretty fair comment, but she's been hung out to dry by the NDP, and the BC Jewish community is not happy. They're furious. And on the other side of the equation, the radical supporters of Hamas are very pleased that all of their lobbying and bullying has taken full effect. At the very least, this is a black eye for the NDP in general, and I'd suggest Premier David Eby in particular.
Robin, Twitter and other social media have exploded with reaction to this firing. Here's a cross-section of opinion. The dean of BC Press Gallery and columnist for the Vancouver Sun, Vaughn Palmer, writes that Robinson was fired, and it wasn't a mutual decision. He goes on about the way the NDP has clearly picked a side in this Middle Eastern conflict. He writes, Mitzi Dean, EB doesn't fire for incompetence. No trophies for critics, including Indigenous leaders. He writes about Selena Robinson. EB says she has to go now. He's under fire from a community whose votes and dollars he needs in this election year.
And we've had more opinions from near and far, including Victoria businessperson and commentator Janice Williams, who has long been critical of things going on in Victoria City Hall, in particular Councillor Susan Kim, who signed an open letter condemning Israel and questioning reports that Israeli women were beaten and raped by Hamas. And that was back in October. Williams observes, Susan Kim, not censured, not resigned. Selena Robinson, removed from cabinet. Difference here, pro-Hamas versus pro-Jewish.
Janice is relentless. She writes this kind of comment every single day. Jim Thielman writes on X, formerly known as Twitter, we've had weekly demonstrations shouting anti-Jewish genocidal chants in Victoria for 4 months. They've openly praised Hamas and called for a global intifada, all without a single comment by the premier. But one errant remark from the most prominent Jewish member of the BCNDP, and bang, she's fired in 72 hours.
And you know, John, we've said this on numerous shows, and it's worth saying again and repeating on the Rumble Room. We, like the vast majority of Canadians, believe that the Palestinian people need and deserve a homeland. The West Bank needs to be made into a Palestinian state, free and safe. And Israel has to withdraw those settlements that have been built on the West Bank in order to accomplish that. And as for the Gaza, it should also be part of this state. I don't exactly know how that's going to happen because the two places are not connected. They're divided. It's like East and West Pakistan. But how this can be achieved can be decided in negotiations. And we are all looking for a peaceful outcome here. And we do believe that there's a lot of support in Western countries. And we also think that the Arab countries, the oil-rich Arab neighbors, need to step up and really help here, because up until now, for the most part, they have paid mainly lip service to the Palestinian people.
People marching for Palestine and calling for the end of the war in the Gaza have every right to be heard. But simply condemning Israel and endorsing its instruction with slogans like, "The river to the sea, Palestine must be free," is simply wrong, and more importantly, ineffective. These activists claim that by not supporting Hamas, people like us are endorsing genocide, apartheid, and colonial exploitation. They love making it sound like Jews have no business in the Middle East, when clearly they have lived there over thousands of years. Compromise needs to happen. I'm not optimistic that will take place, but we will continue to hope that cooler heads prevail and this fighting stops.
And one person who's really watched all of this very closely is somebody who's been a guest on this show before and follows these debates and others with great interest. That's former BC Liberal MLA Sheila Orr, who also happens to be of Jewish descent. And like the vast majority of Canadians, she wants peace in the region. And she does not, however, call for the end of the state of Israel. So for more on that, let's hear from Sheila Orr.
I want to be very careful here not to mix up the issues of this conflict, because, you know, it's got everybody running around with their hair set on fire. But first thing I want to say is, sorry, this is about killing Jews. I have a Jewish heritage. My daughter is a converted Jew, and we are Jews. I'm not a practicing Jew, but I have a very, very big heritage in the Jewish faith. And this is about killing Jews. The attack that happened was not started by anybody else but Hamas. Hamas went out to kill Jews. What I don't understand about the federal government is this. Hamas is a terrorist organization, but it was actually elected by the Palestinians. So the Palestinians went out and they voted like you and I do, and they voted in Hamas. And the interesting thing is, 68% of the Palestinians agreed with the attack that Hamas did, 68%. And apparently that's grown. So what is this about? It's about killing Jews. I'm sorry, I don't care what they say. I don't want to see Palestinian children and parents. I don't want anybody killed. None of us do. But this conflict was started by Hamas, which is an elected political government in Palestine. Don't forget that. We have the oldest synagogue in the country. When this war happened, when the attack happened and the Jewish community got together, police had to go to the synagogue. This is Victoria. So I talked to a couple of friends who are practicing Jews, and they're Canadians, born and bred Canadians. They said in their entire lives, they have never felt more threatened or unsafe in this country than they do now. So what is the federal government doing? Nothing. Now, let's just 1 minute talk about the Israelis. Just 1 minute. 3,000 years or less, they have been persecuted. And then when they finally, after the Holocaust, which some people say didn't happen, well, we all know it did. It was shocking. I mean, it was the worst thing that ever happened in the world. After the Holocaust, the Jewish people said, "We're done. We're not putting up with this anymore." And I don't blame them. They've had it. They have been persecuted. They've been murdered. They've been terrorized. And today they are being terrorized. And they said, we're finished. They're a powerful, strong, organized body.
If a ceasefire can take place that leads to real negotiations, like the Good Friday Agreement in Northern Ireland, then this would be great news. But we need to see signs from both sides, that they're ready to talk and be serious about negotiations. Certainly, we know they're moderates on both sides. And many moderate Muslims, both here and in the Middle East, pray for peace and a resolution.
Absolutely, John. And you know, the Canadian Muslim community is wide and very diverse. And like most Canadians, the vast majority of Muslims simply want to be able to raise their families and live as Canadians in peace. But there, of course, have been challenges along the way. Back in 9/11, it was very clear that Muslims here were feeling a lot of heat, a lot of hostility from the wider community. And Muslims to this day want their collective voice to be heard as really a voice of reason.
We're very fortunate, Robin, to be able to chat on the VRR with a leading member of the Muslim community. Haroon Sadiqi was a longtime editor and a columnist with Toronto Star and has been awarded the Order of Canada. He was invited to speak at a Canadian International Council function in Victoria recently, but the January snow delayed his arrival, unfortunately. But thanks to Zoom, he's able to join us now and talk about being a Canadian and a person who is also a very proud Muslim. Let's Zoom him in.
The show is always looking for very interesting guests from across the country. We've reached all the way to Toronto for this particular interview. And Haroon Sadiqi, so nice to have you on the program.
My pleasure, from the center of the universe.
Yes,
we often say that. Now you're out to talk about a book. You're out in the West Coast to talk about your newest book, which is called My Name Is Not Harry. And yes, Perhaps before we get into our rock'em sock'em questions, I just like to ask you about the title. I hear it has something to do with the Premier of Manitoba a number of years ago not getting your name right.
I used to be in Brandon, Manitoba, 1968 to 1978. Occasionally, we used to go to the legislature in Winnipeg to cover it. This very brilliant conservative, very ideological, Sterling Lyon. Remember, he was one of the fellows who had very strenuously opposed the repatriation of the Constitution and the Charter of Rights. He was brilliant, ideologically right-wing and so on. Anyway, and old-fashioned, that is the point. And he would normally say, hi, Harry, how are you? And I think I told him once. And the next time he said it, I said, Premier, I have told you my name is not Harry. I don't look like Harry. I don't want to be Harry. I am Haroon. And there was a bit of a silence. And then he just walked off without acknowledging one way or the other. I was just telling this story to my friend, Adrian Clarkson, the former Governor General of Canada. And she and her husband, John, said, that is the title of your book. I said, what do you mean that's the title of my book? No, that is the title. Regardless of what you are doing, that is the title of your book. So it stuck and there it is.
It's a great title.
Fabulous. Yeah.
You're an award-winning journalist, Order of Canada. Not a lot of journalists have the Order of Canada, and that's a great thing. And also the Canadian Journalism Foundation made you a lifetime award winner, and that's a wonderful achievement as well.
That is very kind of them. Yes,
and a big background in journalism as primarily in print. You were the editor emeritus and former columnist with the Toronto Star, and you've talked about a number of these things in your newest book, and you've written other books previously as well that we could also touch on. But you have said that 9/11, you went from being a journalist who happened to be a Muslim to a Muslim journalist. Could you explain?
The terrorists, 19 terrorists who killed nearly 3,000 innocent Americans were Muslim terrorists. And then it, all of a sudden, out of the blue, it became that because they were 19 Muslim terrorists, all Muslims must be terrorists, kind of thing. You know, this conflation and laying of collective guilt back to World War II, Japanese Canadians and Japanese Americans and so on. And all of a sudden, people started asking me, what do you have to say? Me personally, I'm responsible for it, you see. And I was a Canadian journalist who happened to be Muslim, and all of a sudden I was turned into a Muslim journalist. What do you, Muslim Siddiqui, have to say about Beslan or wherever some atrocity was taking place? So I was deemed to be or accused to be personally responsible, which is a way of saying all Muslims were put on the spot. So what do you have to say? What do I have to say? Nothing more than what you may have to say or any civilized person would have to say. So that was what transpired in the United States. Unfortunately, some of that spilled over into Canada. A very vocal, strong minority of Canadians, including the establishment, including the conservative media in this country, became virulently anti-Muslim. So we have majority of Canadians saying what I've just said they were saying. And a very tiny and very vocal minority became Islamophobic almost overnight.
Haroon, thank you for that answer. We so appreciate you joining us in the Rumble Room. Our Robin and I appreciate it. Our listeners appreciate it, but more importantly, our viewers appreciate having you on the Rumble Room. I'm going to give some context to my question here. We've talked about 9/11 now. I was young when most Canadians, when I was young, which is maybe not so long ago. I hope that I
you remember the line in MASH. The doctor comes in, there's a crisis going on, and the doctor comes, Hawkeye comes. What is his name? Hawkeye? One of the doctors comes and says, yeah, let me in, let me in. I was once a child myself. I can fix this.
Yes. When I was young.
When I was, yes, go ahead.
Most Canadians saw communism, particularly Russian communism, as the great threat. But today, of course, since 9/11, the Gulf War, Taliban, notwithstanding Ukraine, many seem to have shifted their focus from the red menace to a perceived green menace.
Right. What do Muslims have to say about this? Why don't Muslims condemn this? Muslims have condemned it a million times. And then they still the question would be, why don't they condemn it? So somebody had a great answer for it, saying, why don't you look in your inboxes? You have the answer.
All right. Let's now reflect on some most recent issues. We've been seeing marches and protests across Canada and the Western world recently, once again, bringing Muslim rights into focus. Even though these conflicts don't have much to do with being a Canadian Muslim, as a journalist, you've seen all kinds of protests and marches throughout the years. Have you observed this as an effective way to deliver a message and build public support? Or does it really just rely or depend on the issue at play?
Yeah, both sides have a right to do what they wish to do. They have a right to lobby the government and so on. I mean, go back. You see, we forget that Canada, being an immigrant nation, has... The one great Canadian mythology is, you better not bring the troubles of back home to Canada. Don't import them here. That is a sort of general rule, right? Okay, can we please talk about the French and the British who brought what they brought, the English and the French, whose lingering fight we're still paying the price for? We cannot develop amnesia thinking, this is new. This we don't like. Well, that's welcome to the history of Canada, folks. Second part. Question is, are they protesting? Are they doing things within the rule of law? So long as they're doing within the rule of law, it is fine. You know, I mean, Canada is full of people who have come from very divided parts of the world, and both sides of every conflict in the world is present in Canada. Indians and Pakistanis, Tamils and Buddhists, Sikhs and Hindus, Jews and Christians, Jews and Muslims, Macedonians and Serbs, on and on. The list is endless. So we cannot be selective about what we get hyper about. Various lobbies lobby the government. What is the duty of the prime minister of the day or the government of the day? Being politicians, they want to please both sides. So one day the statement is this side, then the other day is this side. And Mr. Justin Trudeau is proving to be a master of this, going this one day this side, one day that side. I want to know from the Prime Minister of the day, What does he think in his primary duty as to what he should do in the interest of Canada, not in the interest of this lobby or that lobby? There was Stephen Harper, for example. You disagreed with him, but he was absolutely clear where he stood. You agreed with him or disagreed with him. I often disagreed with him. But there was a certain clarity that he had to his positions. That same kind of clarity is missing in this current prime minister of the day. He's trying to please both sides, and he's pleasing neither. And I don't care about that as a Canadian citizen. I want to know, Prime Minister, can you articulate here what is in the interest of general common good of Canada? Where should Canada stand on this issue? Lester B. Pearson stood where he stood in the Suez crisis in 1956. Jean Chrétien stood in 2003 and said no to George W. Bush to join the war on Iraq, for example. Stated it clearly. He low-bridged it, but he stated it very clearly. Mr. Harper said, I am fully supportive of Israel in the 2006, was it, war on Lebanon. I don't hear that clarity from this prime minister. That is the bigger issue.
Some very good and interesting points. And you know, the thing that I think is lacking, and this isn't really the next question, but it occurs to me, is we need more of this kind of open discourse. And it seems to me as the media gets smaller and shrinks, there's fewer newspaper outlets, there's fewer reporters. When I was a legislative reporter, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there were twice as many reporters and journalists working in the legislature as there are today. And that's right across the country. There's fewer and fewer voices. It's one of the reasons that John and I are doing this on an internet platform, is because it's important that it still gets heard. But that must be a despair to you as well, as somebody who's been in the business for so many years, seeing an industry that we all care about shrinking away and voices and opinions not being heard.
Not being heard at all. I mean, it's a tragedy, you know. This is not the import of your question, but I've long favored a print version of the CBC in Canada. People get shocked by, oh, yeah, do you want a state-run news agency? Well, CBC is a state-run, goes back to the Broadcast Act of 1936. It has held Canada together. Conservatives might want to hate them in the American kind of fashion, in a libertarian fashion. But CBC has served a great purpose of binding this nation together, regardless of our God-given right to take pot shots at them every day. What is wrong in having a print version of the CBC if, in fact, the profit motive, the business model has broken down?
But we need a lot more voices than just the CBC, is what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying that the CBC shouldn't exist. But we lose reporters every day. There's fewer and fewer people.
The model is broken down completely, you know? I mean, it's a tragedy. I mean, you and I worked at a time when expenses were no bar.
We see the debate that has been raging about immigration in Canada, and a lot of it's around housing. A lot of it's around housing, quite frankly. Of course, places like Toronto really feel it, because the vast majority of new immigrants seem to be going to Southern Ontario. They also go, to a lesser degree, to other big Canadian cities. And there's new polling that shows that there is almost 70% of Canadians want immigration to decrease. And we're hearing from Ottawa now that that's getting the ear of the Ottawa government and the federal government. Now, do you suspect that the Muslim community in general, and I'm not talking about specifics because I know it's a diverse community, but in general, do you think most Muslims feel the same way about this as most Canadians, even though many of them are actually newer to the country for the most part?
There are two questions in that. One is, you must remember the famous Canadian historian Irving Abella's statement, Canada is a nation of immigrants that hates immigrants. So all old Canadians and native-born Canadians and even old immigrants want to hate new immigrants, you know. So that's one part of it. But we have turned that around, and lately we have said, we need more immigrants because we need more skills, not only in the computer and high-tech industries and so on, which is what's happening, but also we need them in the service industry. Depending on the age, at one time it was the desperate need for construction workers, therefore Italians, therefore so and so. So the needs change. The central fact remains in Canada. Canada is an aging society, as is Europe. We need younger people to work, people of working age, so that they can work, contribute to the GDP, and pay for your and my Medicare. The only immigrants available are going to come from the third world. They are not white folks. They are non-whites who immigrate. Those are the only people available. That's the only available labor pool. No Germans are going to move to Canada and so on. Canadians have accepted that too as a multicultural society, that we are a white majority nation, we are a white, we are a Christian majority nation, but we are not a white nation, we are not a Christian nation. This is a big development. People don't realize how much of a transformation this has been in Canada, how the Canadian population has accepted it. Those two consensus remain. Now back to the what the current issue is, are we bringing in too many of them too quickly? That is the issue on the public mind. Housing costs are high. Inflation has been high. How are we going to do it? So the questions are really generally have been about the management aspect of how we are doing it. Nobody has said we don't need immigrants anymore. More important, nobody is saying we don't want those brown immigrants coming into this country. That is an extraordinary thing, because if there is a fault line across the Western world, United States and Europe, it is over immigration. It is over the color line. What is the Mexican border all about? All these Latinos, non-whites are coming in. What is the thing in France about? Oh, all these Muslims are going to come and take over. Arabia is happening here. Londonistan is happening. In Canada, we have not had that kind of discourse. This is an extraordinary tribute to the Canadian public at this point and this particular generation. The issues that are being raised are economic, valid, and need to be managed better.
I have spent now last half dozen years as a consultant addressing workplace staffing challenges. Mm-hmm. And dealing directly with an indigenous workplace culture and peoples, mm-hmm. and more recently with foreign worker recruitment, foreign workers, and recruiting them to Canada. And in both instances, as I work through with a community and then bringing them to Canada and then having them starting to work and live here, two issues have been highlighted as challenges. One of them being, in fact, a little bit of the opposite of what you're saying, is that the workforce are reluctant or prejudiced in adopting these new cultures or these different colored people into the workplace. And that a precursor to a successful absorption of these folks into the workplace is a necessary cultural training. And a company that goes through cultural training will be more successful, et cetera. Okay. Yeah. A second component that has to be dealt with is at the tail end, we've just talked about this, is fundamentally a lack of settlement services or support, lack of housing, lack of folks, families coming, do they go to school? How do they get their papers? How do they get their licenses? Et cetera, to the point that companies are going, we've got a staffing crisis completely, yet we're not going to bring foreign workers in or indigenous workers in because we don't want to become social workers, okay? So this is actually a big problem, at least mm-hmm. from my perspective, from the last half dozen years that I've been working. Now, I'm going to express an opinion and then ask a question of you. So I happen to be completely the opposite opinion of what's going on. Of the issues that I feel that immigrants and an indigenous workplace just bring so much vibrancy to the Canadian fabric. Okay, as do you, as do you and folks of your ilk and your generation. Therefore, where do you stand on all this? I can sense that I know the answer. But reinforce for us, please, how very important it is to embrace new cultures, new opinions, and new ways in the Canadian workplace and society.
You see, I mean, I'm a very optimistic Canadian. I take the optimistic view of it. I personally have never faced racism in this country, which is not to say there is no racism. Obviously, there is, you know, and we know that. That's one part of it. The second is, we are not Nirvana yet, but we are as close to Nirvana as it gets. That's the argument of my book. Now, of course, there are problems, but do we have, on balance, overall, are we doing better than Europe on this issue? Are we doing better than the United States? I would say so, yes. Are there prejudices in the workplace? I'm sure there are. I mean, you have firsthand view of it. I have a sort of slightly balcony view of it. Democracy is a slow, agonizing progress. You have to be at it all the time. So we have human rights commissions, we have laws, we have a consensus that we have built, but that doesn't mean everybody is free of prejudice. I have prejudices, you have prejudices, and so we have to keep working at it. We are better at working at it than other nations. That's all I'm saying. And that is the argument of my book. I've not given a free pass to Canada. I've been very critical of various issues and so on, hopefully in a constructive way. But by and large, we should not be self-flagellating ourselves to such an extent that, Mort Weinfeld is a professor of sociology at McGill University. He and I were talking about this book. And Mort said, you know what? None of my students would agree with your optimism. I said, why is that, Mort? He said, they are very critical about Canada. You are painting too positive a picture. So I said, I mean, that's their job. They're young. Their job is to protest. Their job is to hold our feet to the fire. But that doesn't mean that we should be so defensive that we fail to see the good side of Canada.
Well, Haroon Siddiqui clearly is saying that being a Muslim has its challenges, but that doesn't preclude you from being totally 100% Canadian. And it's important in Canada that we continue to honor this diversity and inclusion and dialogue. We've got to talk to each other. It's no good screaming at each other and making accusations and using rhetoric. Let's talk and let's set an example for the world on how we can move forward peacefully on all of this front. And that's what they need to do in the Middle East as well. On that note, John, I think it's time to wrap another Rumble Room.
It certainly is. And as we've stated repeatedly through the several years we've been online, we welcome anyone on the show to provide their perspective. And certainly this week, we've been plowing through some very weighty topics. But we hear from our viewers that they're interested and appreciate getting a middle of the road, Victoria, Vancouver Island, BC perspective on some of these major issues. And speaking about our viewers, thank you all of you, because that's where the internet is everywhere, for watching the Rumble Room on a consistent basis. We are somewhat startled by the amount of people watching what we have to say and how much I move around, because I enjoy my chair exercise all the time. Continue to follow us on Facebook, on X, on YouTube. On our podcast, you can listen instead of viewing us. You can catch us on Instagram as well as TikTok. So there's so many ways that you can like, subscribe, follow, and most importantly, from our perspective, you can comment. And boy, do we get a lot of comments, and we try to include some of them on our viewer mail. So with that all being said, I remain your Croatian sensation. I hope that's how I'm perceived. And friend to peace in the Middle East, John Jurisic.
And I'm Robin Adair. And John, when it comes to dealing with hot topics, we will continue to deliver. We won't back down as we rumble on.